We are gathering here tonight as a yahrzeit to Esther, Jacqueline, Bat, Zaiza, right? Zaiza?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And also I see here Moshe Rabinov and Avram, Daniel, Ben, Regina, Nissim Ben Baron, and all the other Bnei Israel that needs Ilui Neshama. In 1 minute, I would like to explain what does it mean, yahrzeit. We have different customs in Judaism that for people who do not understand the roots of those customs, sometimes it just looks that one day people sat and they made up a custom and people liked it, and over the years it became very popular, and now all over the world the Jews are doing it. You should know that every custom, everything that Jews do all over the world, if you go to the beginning of the process, everything starts from the Torah, and it's all connected to one day. The day that the Jews received the Torah in Mount Sinai 3,321 years ago. This is the biggest event in the history of this world. Nowhere in history we have recorded an event that millions of people stood around the mountain and heard God and Moses are speaking, even though it wasn't a long conversation. It was only the first two commandments that were told in public, but millions of people heard the voice of God for the first and last time in history. It's true that from the time of Adam, 5,771 years ago, that God spoke to individuals such as Adam, such as Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Noah. This is individuals that were prior to the acceptance of the Torah. Also, he spoke to individuals after the acceptance of the Torah. Prophet Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yoel, Haggai, Amos, all these prophets. But as a public event, first and last time in history, and that's, by the way, I made a DVD, and I brought you some MP3 audio lectures and some DVDs, include my DVD, that the famous debate that I had with the priest, with a Christian professor. It's very recommended. I'm sure you're going to like it. I never got one negative comment about it, so it has to be good if so many people like it. We had more than 1 million viewers just on the debate alone. So, and it's all free of charge. You have nothing to lose. So that's one thing. Now, the DVD that I made, it's called Torah and Science. And I see, you know, every Jew who ever watched that DVD never stayed the same after watching it. And I promise you. And this is with personal guarantee signed on it. Even from Jews from birth, Jews who were born in yeshiva, Hasidic Jews, Litvish Jews, Faradic Jews, Yemenite Jews, doesn't matter, that all their life they live very religious life. From the minute they watch this DVD, they came to me and say, now, for the first time in my life, I really understand what does it mean to be a frum Jew, a religious Jew. Up to now, I was keeping everything like a robot. My father was keeping, my grandfather was keeping, I born into that reality, it's tradition, I did it. First time I understand that everything I do can be proven scientifically. It's a complete different thing. For us, we have to understand. In science, there is a very interesting expression. We all know that we call ourselves believers. You believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. I'm a believer. Believe, faith, emunah. This is what we all know. But not that many Jews know that to be a believer in God in the Torah, it's a derogatory thing. It's not a good thing. Why is it? Saying I believe in God actually is saying that I have doubts. Saying I believe that the Torah is from God, it's actually saying I'm not sure. I should never use the word I believe that God is here. I believe the Torah is divine. That's an insult. I know 100%. 1,000,000% that God is watching me every second of my life. And every second, everything that happened in the world is supervised 100% by Him. Everything that happened needs His approval. The fact that there are many things around me that I don't understand or I don't have an explanation for does not decrease any of this 100% knowledge that God is watching and running the whole show. What else? I also know 100%, not believe. Believing means not knowing in science. When a scientist say we believe that that's what's going to happen tomorrow, everybody understands that they have at least 10-20% doubt. They're not sure. If they're sure, they say tomorrow at 10 o'clock, that's what's going to happen. But since they use the word we believe, that means there is a doubt. It is very difficult, especially in this century, to be a religious Jew when you have even 1% doubt. Why? Because we all have evil inclination that always convince us to go against the truth, to live a fake life, to live life of illusions, life of lies, to lie, to cheat, to do all kinds of bad things. It's constantly pushing us to the negative side. The only way to resist this influence of this evil inclination is knowing that everything I do according to this book is 100% divine, and I'm going to receive a huge reward for every step I do. Nothing is for free. King David wrote in Tehillim, one of the most legendary books in history. Even Chinese people, in my own eyes, I saw they read Tehillim. Chinese people, who some of them believe in idols, they still read Tehillim to praise God. It's very interesting. How can it be? You ask them, who's God? They won't say that it's the same God. But I saw in my own eyes a Chinese woman read Tehillim. I ask her, why do you read this? Do you know what? Yeah, it's King David. It's praising God. Maybe she was Christian. I don't know. But either way, the book of Tehillim, David HaMelech wrote, King David wrote, I observe your commandments for the reward that you promise to your followers. Now, it's not an embarrassment. I go to work. Why? Because I want to make money. Nobody ever went to work for free. Yeah, there are volunteers. They only volunteer after they have income. They don't have income. How can you volunteer? You need some gasoline to run on, no? You volunteer when you have plenty of money. You can go and do volunteer work. If you don't have income to feed your children, you have to work. You have to earn. You go to work because you like the beautiful eyes of your boss. No, not because of that. You come because your boss is writing you a check in the end of the week, and that's why you came, and everybody knows it. Let's move forward. We are actually now, one week before Purim. I would like to combine two different topics. It's not so simple, but I will try to do it. Combining Purim and Emunah, faith. But before I go into Purim, we have to clarify one very interesting thing. Since I just said that believing means not knowing, 3,300 years we hear all over the world speeches, rabbis, people that are all speaking about Emunah, constantly. It's a very popular subject. Here comes this young guy, and he smashed everything in 1 second. No more Emunah, no, now knowledge. I have the Torah who backs me up. Not that I put Emunah, I dismiss it completely. I just put it as a secondary thing. First comes knowledge. After the knowledge exists, comes the Emunah. If a person hands you a check, you do not know if the check is good or not. When you find out who is this person, now you know if the check will be good. Now it's worth to believe, to trust him or not. If you know he's the owner of the bank and he gives you an $18 check, now you know the check is good. But you know, the person, you never know who he is. Maybe he's a crook. Give me a check. How do I know? It's good, not good. It's fair. Emunah, 50% Emunah I have. Maybe it will be good. Ah, but if the President of the United States in front of the whole media gave me an $18 check, what's the chance it will bounce? It will be a big embarrassment for him. Ah, I know his word is good enough for me. First, we have to know who is God. Why he gave us the Torah? How do we know the Torah is not something the rabbis made it up? For instance, if you open the New Testament, it takes exactly 3 minutes to prove that the New Testament, what almost 2 billion Christians are following, it's complete nonsense. 3 minutes, not more than that. You show a few mistakes from the New Testament, and every normal person who sees this mistake has to admit God could not make such foolish mistakes. For instance, I'll give you one example. It says that the cave of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is in the city of Shechem, Nablus. Everybody knows that it's in Hebron. It was always there. How can it be a divine book that writes such nonsense? How can God make mistakes that me and you wouldn't make? Every intelligent person would know that the cave of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is in Hebron. I ask my little kids, where is it? They know it's in Hebron. Especially when Christians follow the Torah. They call it the Old Testament, the New Testament. They claim it's part one, part two. It's from the same God. The same writer gave both of them. So part two have to comply with part one. Part two cannot contradict any detail from part one because all Christians admit that the Jews stood in Mount Sinai and received the Torah from God directly. Everybody heard God and Moses are speaking. Jews had the Torah for 1,300 years until Christians started their book. So the book has to comply 100% with the Torah. And here the Torah says that it's in Hebron, and over there it says that it's in Shechem. Big mistake. Another mistake, Jacob went to Egypt with 70 people, the Torah says. All of a sudden over there it says 75 people. The person who wrote it made mistakes. You and I, as careful as we may be, when we write a book and we know we are faking, it's a fake book, we're going to make mistake. Why? To write such a long book, you have to have a computer mind. Because if a month ago you wrote some kinds of nonsense story that you made up, and you have to always make sure that none of your details contradict any word of the entire Tanakh, which is 24 books. Very difficult to control every verse in the Tanakh. There's hundreds of thousands of verses. How a normal person remember all details of the Tanakh? There's not even one person today in the world that can tell you every word of the Tanakh by heart. Nobody. So to write a fake book and always to make sure that you're not contradicting any of the word of God is just impossible. One example from the Quran. The Quran says that Haman and Pharaoh had a meeting. How can it be? Haman was born 1,000 years after the last Pharaoh died. There's a whole conversation between Haman and Pharaoh. They have a meeting. Haman and Pharaoh, how can it be? The last Pharaoh is dead already 1,000 years until this Rasha Haman was born and gave us the holiday of Purim. There's no way in the history. Oh, I give you another example. It says over there that Miriam, the sister of Moshe and Aaron, the daughter of Amram, which we all know she was a prophet, a holy woman, Miriam, she is the mother of JC. Why? The mother of JC, her name was also Mary. They made a mistake. They took two different Miriams. One Miriam is the sister of Moshe, and another Miriam, she is the mother of JC, and in the story it became the same woman. How can it be? This is what I say. A kindergarten Jew that learns Torah would not make such mistakes. So you see, it's full of human errors. But our Torah, and I tell you after 16 years of giving lectures all over the world and having more than 100,000 viewers and getting hundreds of emails every day, not one person was able up to this moment in history to find one mistake in the Torah. Nothing. Not only that, every chapter in the Torah that you're going to open randomly, open in every chapter you want, I will prove you in that page that a person was unable to write this page. 100%. If you want, test me after. You bring the Chumash after the lecture and I'll show you. Anywhere you open, I will show you prophecies. I will show you codes inside the text. Let's give one example. Now we're going into Purim. Purim is about 1,000 years after the Torah was given to the Jews. From the Megillah, you're going to remember me next Saturday night. From the Megillah, we see that all Jews were all religious Jews. 2,400 years ago, all Jews were all religious. There was not a Jew that was not religious. In case you have a doubt, in Yemen, there was a very large Jewish community. Up to this moment, today there's only 300 Yemenite Jews left. But up to now, in history, the Yemenites was one very established community. Up to this moment, for more than 2,500 years, there was not even one not religious Yemenite Jew in the country that called Yemen. Not even one. Even today, you go to Yemen, all 300 Jews are Shomer Shabbos, fully, fully religious, modest, learning Torah, they have yeshiva, I can show you a video. All of them religious. You go 100 years back in history, everyone was religious. You go 1,000 years back, everyone was religious. Never in the history of Yemen, Jews betrayed God and left the Torah. Never. Why? Just all of a sudden, all Yemenites became good people and the rest of the Jews were all bad? How can it be? The answer is, they didn't have the modern lifestyle that Jews in Europe had, or in even other Arab countries. Over there, life was very primitive. There was nothing to do besides learn. You have your own life, but life is very simple, very poor. There is no strong evil inclination to leave the religion and do something. Because even the Muslims over there, they were all religious, they're all modest, there's nothing to do. So there is only one thing, to listen to God and follow his laws. Of course, people used to do, you know, make sins, speak gossip. We are people, we make sins. But Shomer Shabbos, everyone. In the Megillah, Haman comes to Ahasuerus, and he said, there is this nation, this weird nation, they have strange clothes, different language, different religion, different than all of us. This is, remember, we are talking in 127 countries. The Megillah says, Ahasuerus was the king of the world. The same thing Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, occupied the whole world. The Romans occupied the whole world. Alexandros Mokdon, the Greek, he occupied almost the whole world. Every leader of an empire, first thing he wanted to do is to occupy the whole world. And eventually they arrived to Jerusalem to destroy or to occupy Jerusalem, one of the two. And one of them was Ahasuerus. He's controlling 127 countries. And Jews are living there. Most of them were in Paras, Persia, but there are Jews all over. And a man comes and says to him, these Jews are strange. They dress different. They have different language. And they have a religion different than all of us. Remember, this is before Christianity, before Islam. There was no Christianity, no Islam. There were many different cults. But officially, the only religion that started at that time was Buddhism, 2,400 years ago. That's about the same time, or maybe more, maybe after, but it's just the beginning of Buddhism. But up to there was only cults. But there are thousands of cults. Today we have more than 80,000 religions and cults in the world. More than 80,000. And it's growing by every week. There's another few cults that begin somewhere. So Haman comes and says, look at them. They have everything different. They don't eat this, they don't do this, they don't dress this, they have don't Sabbath, they don't work. He has complaints. If we had Haman today, Haman could not come to Obama and say, dear Obama, let's get rid of these Jews. They're different. They all dress different. They're all religious. They all have one foreign language. He couldn't say it because most Jews are not religious. If you take 100 Jews in New York, 10 of them religious, 90% of them look exactly like Goyim. Nobody can tell that he's a Jew. Maybe he have a Star David necklace, fine. But other than that, everyone who walks in the street, yeah, that's it. Nobody knows. Right? Star David, yeah. Star David. So other than that, there's no way to know. If he walks with a yarmulke or tzitzit or black hat or whatever, then you know. But other than that, there's no way to know. So today, no Haman could come to any leader and say the same statement. Only if all Jews are religious, he can come to the king and say all of them are strange. So this is one proof. The Gemara speaks, the Gemara, it's the oral Torah. In case you didn't know, when we received the written Torah, it came together, combined with the oral law. There is no way to keep one law of the written Torah without clarifying it carefully in the oral Torah. There are 613 laws in the Torah, 613 commandments, and there is not even one detail, one explanation how to keep these commandments. Nothing, no instructions, just the name of the mitzvah. You should have a sign on your hand. What sign? Doesn't say. You should observe the 7 day. How? Doesn't say. So many things. You should do this and this and this. How? How? Tell me how. It doesn't say. Just say what needs to be done. It's a headline. Brief. One or two verses, and it's over. Just in case you didn't know. One pair of tefillin, it takes 1 year to prepare. It's all handmade. From the time they slaughter the cow, until they take off the skin, until they remove all the air, the whole process, and then to ride it with a feather, like mamash, like the old days. It takes more than 1,000 things until it becomes a kosher tefillin. If you made one of the 1,000 instructions different than as was written in oral law, not the written law, the tefillin is not kosher. instead of a thousand or whatever it cost, it doesn't cost a penny. You have to bury it in the ground. Nobody can use it. If you give it to check, they won't even return it to you. Why? They don't want you to put a pasul one, saying the name of God on a non-kosher tefillin. It's a sin. They say, no, you cannot get it back. Yeah, they put an X on it, finished. Why? One little detail is different. It's not divine anymore. It's human error. Human error, it's zero. Excuse me?
You can fix
the fellow? You can fix. Some of the things you can fix, some of the things you cannot fix. Depend. If, for instance, the name of God is written wrong or connected, one letter touched the other, there's nothing you can do. Why? The name of God, there's no permission to erase. Other, something else, there's permission to fix. But even how to fix, there is a special way how to do it. You have to go in reverse to where the mistake is, correct it, and then go back. If you have the name of God, you cannot erase it. There are, trust me when I tell you, there's more than 1,000 things until you make a one pair, kosher pair of tefillin. Where is it in the written Torah? Nowhere. Is it possible to think that God gave a written Torah in front of millions of people and 613 commandments? Why 613? Because we have 248 organs in a body, 365 ligaments. That's exactly how the Torah is designed. 248 positive mitzvot as the number of the organs in the body, 365 restriction, every restriction connect to one ligament. And that's when the soul exits the body in a time of death, we go right away to begin our trial. There's a trial, same thing, we have a trial in a court here, there's a trial over there. And same thing, there's a lawyer against you, there's a lawyer who protects you, same thing. Just, there's only one difference, that over here you can lie, and you can bribe people, and over there you cannot bribe God. I am the God of the justice who will not receive any bribe and will not twist the judgment. This is the truth, and that's it. Over there you have to face the truth. How long is that trial? 1 year. That's why we say Kaddish for 1 year after a Jew died. Why this? The tradition comes from where? That all of a sudden, after he died, his sons begin to say Kaddish for 1 year. Why not 1 month? Why not 10 years? Because the trial is 1 year. That's why we say for 1 year. Why we see Shiva? Why 7 days? Because the Kabbalah teach that the soul still have permission to visit this world for 7 days after the time of death. The person who passed away is able to see his funeral. He see who really cries and who's counting the millions that he received. Who calls the lawyer or who sits in the house and really cries for his father. Everything he sees. But after 7 days, no more connection to this world. The Torah brings a story that King Saul had a war tomorrow with Amalek. Very, very disturbed from the war because he felt that they're not ready. And it's going to be a huge tragedy. So he went to a woman, and this woman was able to connect with souls of, you know, it's like seance. What we call today medium. We have people like this today. I met many of them. So what happened over there? He put a custom. He didn't want her to know that he's the king of Israel. He went to this woman, and he asked to speak to Prophet Shmuel, prophet, and he brought his soul. And when Prophet Samuel came, he got very disturbed, very upset. The first thing he told him, why did you disturb my soul to return to this world? Why is in heaven? Who wants to come back here? If you're in heaven, he got very nervous. All the commentators, they write that a person that is called back to this world, he doesn't know what happened. He's in the best place you can imagine. All of a sudden, he has to return to this place. In case you have doubts if there is life after life, it will take me exactly 2 minutes to prove to you, 2 minutes. No, you don't need more than that. Even though I have a 3 hours lecture about it, very, very popular lecture, life after death, reincarnation, hypnosis, hypnotizing people, they're speaking in different languages, a man speak like a woman, woman speak like a man, a person who doesn't speak Arabic today, all of a sudden in the middle of the hypnosis, he speaks Arabic, where are you? I live in Syria. What do you do? I'm a Jewish, I own a vegetable store. What year is this? 1921. You're speaking to him now, he speaks Arabic. When you bring him back to reality, you show him the video, he says, what am I saying? What am I saying? I don't understand what I'm saying. So this is who you used to be in your previous life. There are people, there are thousands of people in the world, and they're all documented, that remember without hypnosis their previous life. They were tested by professionals. They say, take me to this country. I want to visit my wife. Their wife is still alive. They died. They came back to life. 10 years later, is a kid. Say, take me to my wife. I want to visit her. What your wife? You're only 10 years old. Take me to my wife. And he goes to the house, and he recognizes everything. He knows what's in the closets, what's in the attic, with a camera. So that, you watch that lecture. It's very recommended. This is just to give you an idea. So the souls exist. The fact that the Torah have 3 commandments, do not disturb the deceased people, God say, when he gave us the Torah, do not communicate with them, do not call them back to this world. The fact that in a divine book it said to us, to the Jews, don't, you're not allowed to make seance, you're not allowed to call them. It's lo la'alot ba'ov, lo ye becha, o ma'ale ba'ov, shoel o ve'idoni. V'doresh el ha-metim. 3 different ways to communicate with the dead people. So if God wrote 3 different verses, do not disturb the dead people, do not ask them questions, don't call them, which that means it's possible. Maybe people didn't know how to do it 3,300 years ago, but the fact that the divine Torah say do not do it, that means it's possible. If I do not know how to do it, doesn't mean it doesn't exist. If God told me don't call them, that means it's possible to do. Then, when we review now the Torah, after I explained that the written Torah goes together with the oral law, there's no way to understand one word from the written Torah unless if you go to what God gave Moses together with that. All the explanation were separated from the text. Why? If it would fall in the hand of the goyim, of the non-Jews, then every goy can join the nation of Israel without coming to a Jewish court to convert. He doesn't need to. Beard everyone had in those days. To cover the head, everyone was covering the head. All he has to do, he has now all the instructions in one book. He learns very carefully. He prepares himself tefillin. He has a talit. He reads the Torah. Now he comes one day. Where are you? I'm a Jew from overseas. Nobody knows who he is. Remember, there's no telephone. Like today, you call the rabbi in Italy. They call me. Do you know this woman? She wants to marry here in Rome. Yeah. You confirm that she's Jewish. You know the family. You know the mother, where they're from, what synagogue. Today, it's very easy. You call, emails. But remember, we are talking 3,300 years ago. All of a sudden, a goy show up. Beard, perot, this, yarmulke. He comes. He knows Torah. He has tefillin. He has everything. He never converted. Tomorrow, your children going to marry him. Or if it's a woman, it's even more serious because the kids will not be Jewish. You marry a non-Jewish woman, your kids are not Jewish according to the Torah. So this is all to prevent that. God separated the written Torah from the oral laws. That even if the goyim will have the written Torah, because everyone can copy it, they still will not be able to understand one of the secrets of the Torah. Now let me give you an example. Comes the oral Torah. 1,000 years after the written Torah was given, the Chachamim were sitting in Babylon. Talmud Bavli, the Gemara. They ask, where do we have information about Esther and Mordechai in the written Torah? Supposedly, it's not even a legitimate question. What do you mean? Esther and Mordechai is 900 years after the Torah was given. How the Torah speaking about Esther and Mordechai? Can I write a book today that speak about somebody who will be important in 1,000 years from now? How can I write today information about him? Do I have this information? So the Gemara ask, where do you see information about Esther and Mordechai? So the Gemara say, in 2 different places. Mordechai, there's a verse that say, the spices, Mordachia, Mordror, in Aramaic, Mordachia. From the Mem, the Gemara say, in this word, more, you have Mordechai. Where do you have Esther? You also have Esther inside the Torah. Now, how do you have Esther? Now, here comes the catch here. About 20 years ago, 2 scientists, Professor Ilya Reeves and Dr. Doron Wittstum, 2 atheist Jews from the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, anti-religion, Reeves is one of the greatest mathematicians in the world, one of the top 5 mathematicians in the world. He goes all over the world. He speaks in Colombia every year. He's a guest of honor. He's a genius, a Russian genius that, he was a communist. He came to Israel as a Russian atheist. And he was asked by a rabbi to develop a computer software to search, to scan the Torah, to find equal mathematical skips in the text, what we call codes, planned codes that are hidden in the text, that are giving information about important events that take place in the world. They paid him money. That's his job. He took this statistic professor, Wheatstone, who's also not religious, together they sat for a few months and they developed the software. What's this software? You enter a name into the computer. The computer say, enter a name. You put any name you want. Now the computer is going to search the entire Torah. He tried to find that name hidden inside the text in equal mathematical skip, which means every X amount of letters, you count until you see hidden names inside. But you see, it's mathematical. It cannot be random. You see, it's a plan. I'll give you an example. If somebody asks you, how can you prove to me in 1 minute the Torah is divine? Without computer, without a laptop, without any book. Just, here I have the Torah, prove to me now that the Torah is divine. Who has an idea how in 1 minute you can prove an atheist Jew that the Torah is divine? You open the first page, Bereshit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. Right? Bereshit bara Elokim. You take the taf of Bereshit, you circle it. Remember, Bereshit finish with taf. Circle it with a pencil. Now begin to count. You count 49 letters, which is 7 times 7. 7 is always repeating as a holy number in Judaism. 7 times 7, 49. You count 49 letters. The 50th letters will be Vav. So now you have Taf, you circle the Vav. You count 49 letters, you get Resh. You circle the Resh. You count 49 letters, the 50th letters is Hey. The word Torah is hidden inside the text in equal mathematical skip of 49. You say, wow, beautiful. But coincidence. I think magics happen sometimes. How can you tell me that God planted? Maybe it's coincidence. So no problem. Coincidence. Let's move forward. You go to the next book, the book of Exodus, Shmot. Ve'ele Shmot bnei Israel abayim Mitzrayma. These are the names of the Jews who came with Jacob to Egypt. Altogether 70. From the word Shmot, you circle the Taf, you count 49 letters, you get Vav. You count 49 letters, you get Resh. You count 49 letters, you get Hey. Again, the word Torah in equal skip of 49 in the second book of Moses. Very interesting. So, still coincidence. So let's go to Leviticus. Nu Vayikra. Nu Ma Vayikra. Over there, you don't have Torah in equal skip. What do you have? The name of God. Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey. In what skip? Again, 49. Yud, 49 letters, Hey, 49 letters, Vav, 49 letters, Hey. Then you go to Bamidbar. Numbers. The Torah is in equal mathematical skip, but this time in reverse, from left to right, towards the center. So we have two books, Torah from right to left. In the center is the name of God. And Bamidbar and Dvarim, Deuteronomy, also Torah in equal skip from left to right, in reverse of 49. So what do we have? We have a menorah. What menorah? With five. The center of the menorah is the center of the world, which is God. Without him, nothing can live. All atoms in material are moving very fast with the energy of God. If you remove the supervision of God in a creation in 1 second, this entire universe becomes smaller than a little gum. The massa of this entire universe. You see this tender? It looks, I don't know, it's 20 pounds, right? It's very heavy. To pick it up, it looks like material. It's all an illusion. It doesn't really exist. Why do you see that it's material here? The atoms move so fast that it looks that the material really exists. But if you remove, no, the scientists cannot understand how the atoms move so fast. What is it like? You have a fan. Let's see your hat. You turn the fan on. The faster it turns, then the illusion looks like you have a complete circle. But you don't have. You have a four arms. It looks like a cross. The faster it turns, what does it look like? The fan is all full, right? It looks like full because you don't even see that it turns around. The atoms move so fast that it looks like an illusion that material is really full, but it's only a movement of atoms that moves and fill up the space. It's very interesting. You take the supervision of Hashem for 1 second, the world cannot last in a second. Everything goes to zero. So then you have the name of God in the center, Torah, and Torah from right to left, from left to right, equals skip. Now you may say, okay, so you find one very interesting thing. That's, by the way, proof that the writer of the Torah was only one source. Why? According to those atheists that claim that the Torah was written in installments, every generation somebody came and they think it's a history book. Then according to that, how did he know to continue the codes of the person who lived 200-300 years ago without knowing him? That's one thing. Second, where did you find a history book that 99% of him speak about the future? Can you find me one history book that speaks about the future? There's not even one. There's millions of books out there. Not even one claim to speak about 500 years what's going to happen. The Torah, almost every chapter speak what's going to happen. One day you'll enter the land, you'll build the temple, then you make scenes, I will destroy your temple, I will send you to the exile, I will send a nation that comes from far away, you will not recognize their language, they'll destroy the temple, they sell you to Egypt to become slaves. Everything happened. How did the Torah know? There's so many prophecies in the text that you see right away. The person was unable to write such a thing. Let me give you now an example. How many letters we have in Megillat Esther? How many letters in a whole Megillah? 12,196. 12,000, remember this number. You go to the Torah, Bereshit bara Elokim. You circle the Aleph of the word Bereshit. You count 12,196 letters. What do you get? Samech. You circle the Samech. Now you have Aleph and Samech. You count 12,196. What do you get? Taf. 12,196. What do you get? Resh. Esther. Right in the beginning of the Torah. The Gemara says, where do you have Esther in the Torah? How am I supposed to have Esther? The Torah is 1,000 years before Esther. Why do you worry? The Torah, it's not a man-made book. The Torah, maybe people are cold, so if I don't want people to freeze because of me. Maybe you put the heat on, I don't know. It's better I sweat and they're all going to sit like this. All right. The speaker always have extra energy. He needs cold. Okay, no problem. So, yeah, all right. So now, now Mordechai. Mordechai. The Gemara says, where do you have Mordechai? Mordachia. Remember the word Mordror. Mordror, Mord, it's two letters. Mem and Resh. You circle the Mem. You count 12,196 letters. You get Resh. 12,196. You get Daled. 12,196 Chaf. 12,196 Yud. Mordechai in equal skip. Now, first, obviously, a person could not write a book that describes 1,000 years of history and inside make thousands of names in equal skip without changing the actual story. It's impossible. Nobody can do even one page we cannot do. Even with the assistance of the best computers in the world, we could not write one chapter and write inside many, many equal skips. It's unhuman. It's above human. A person cannot do such a thing. Especially when almost all these codes are speaking about the future. What person knows what's going to happen in 2,000 years? Here is one proof that I gave you now, that the Torah could never be written by a human being. How many proofs I have? Thousands. Thousands. Go into my website, you see if I'm exaggerating or not. Watch my DVD. Over there alone you have 30, 40 proofs. This is only one proof. You're not convinced? The second one will convince you. You're not convinced? The third one, the fourth one, the fifth. I promise you, you will call me. I had a scientist from NASA, Mr. Silverstein. He called me up. He said, I watched your first movie. This was a very primitive movie 12 years ago. And I have a lot of comments. So I'm driving, and he's giving me his comments. It was a Sunday morning. I was on the Palisades Parkway towards Muncie. He's talking to me on the phone. He tells me, you show the renewal of the moon. You spoke about the number of the stars. And this is a scientist from NASA, a Jew. that was actually a scientist in Machon Weizmann in Israel. And he's, from what I understood, is a big, real big shot because he's in physics, atomic physics. Who knows who he is? I never met him face to face, but over the phone. So I say to him, you know what? It's very hard on the phone. Why don't you send me an email? I answer each one of your questions. Send me many questions, almost in every proof, questions. He tried to argue it. I answer all his questions, and everything, he say, okay, you convinced me. I don't have what to answer. This is a person who works. I showed him that everything they found in NASA, it's all in the Torah. In a generation that we didn't even have a telescope. Forget about satellites. There's no primitive telescope. You know this Galileo telescope from 1608? We didn't have. The first telescope is Galileo, 1608. The Torah gives you the exact number of the stars in the world. How? How a person can count billions and trillions of stars? Who knows? Who is able to give such number? Or the exact renewal of the moon, 6 digits after the decimal points. In a generation, we didn't have a calculator. Calculator we didn't have. Forget about mega computers that can measure the cycle of the moon. Who had such a thing? Who was able to give knowledge about red cow? Red cow have millions of hair. The Torah told you there are 2 unique hairs in the neck. That if you put weight on the back of the cow, these 2 hairs fall down and you can never make them stand ever again. And that's and the eyes of the cow become cross-eyed after you put weight. Why? Because Hashem, God told the Jews, when you have a red cow, you slaughter it, you take water from Nikbat HaShiloach, from a spring in Jerusalem, you mix it with the spices, and this water makes the Kohanim that are Tmeim, that they are impure, they make them pure, that they can enter the Holy Temple. Without that splashing of the water, they cannot enter my temple. And God says, you are allowed to buy the cow from a goy. How can you trust a goy? A goy wants to make money. If a goy will have a red cow today, we will pay him at least $1 billion for it. Why? There was only 9 red cows in history. Only 9. And we are waiting for the last one. We know in tradition that we're going to have all together 10. So now, imagine a goy anywhere in the world say to the Jews, here, come examine my cow. I had last night my cow gave birth. It's a new kafir. All red. Not even 1 black hair, nothing. They check with magnified glass, everything. Perfect. And he wants $1 billion for it. The Jews will do fundraising. They'll do fundraising until they pay him. Why? There's no choice. We must get it. That's the only way to bring Mashiach. Without this, even Mashiach comes today. Oh, every Kohen that you know in the world, every Kohen is Tameh. It's not pure. Why? Walking in the street, you know how many graves are under the highway? Driving on the LIE, driving on the BQE, driving in Israel. There's so many graves under, layers of graves from generation to generation. And so just enough that you walk over a grave, or even you fly with a plane above a cemetery, and there are Jews buried there, all the Kohanim become impure. They're not allowed to enter. You go to visit somebody in a hospital, and there is 1 dead body in that hospital today. You become Tameh. Because the entire hospital, the air for the Kohen, it becomes all Tameh. He cannot enter Bet HaMikdash. So the Torah said, listen, if a goy has a red cow, you're allowed to buy it. But there's one problem. Maybe the goy was putting weight on a cow he didn't know, and by the time he found out, he's lying. He's telling us, no, I didn't put any weight. Of course, if you put weight, the cow doesn't worth $2,000. If you didn't put weight, we'll give you $1 billion. But if you put weight on the back of the cow, we're not even going to pay you what the cow worth. We don't need this cow. Why? It's what the Torah says, if you put 1 time weight on a cow, if you lean on a cow like this, or you put you put this notebook on the cow become obsolete. It's not good anymore. Cannot use it. Asher lo ala alea ol. No weight was put on the back of this cow. That's the condition. How do I know that this Ahmed is telling me the truth? He wants to make $1 billion. Every Jew would lie, even, almost. Well, a Jew will tell you, I put weight. I used the cow yesterday. I put some bags of flowers on the back of it. Once he found out that he's not allowed, he will not tell you that he did it. So Hashem said to the Jews, don't worry, my children. You are my children. No, I protect you. There are 2 ways to know if a weight was put on a cow or not. If a weight was put on the cow, 2 hairs in the neck will fall down, and the eyes of the cow become cross-eyed and never comes back to normal. If that's what happened, don't touch this cow. This is all divine information. Why? What person was able to know from millions of hair that there are two unique ones somewhere in the neck? Unless if it's the creator of the cow. And many other examples as I can give you from now until tomorrow morning, but that's not the topic. Just for you to understand that we have the only book in history that can be proven again and again and again that it's divine. No other book has one proof that it's divine. Quran. Not even one prophecy in the entire Quran. You find one prophecy in the Quran, I'll give you a huge prize. How they all call him Prophet Muhammad? What prophet? Prophet that never gave a prophecy? It's like calling me a pilot. Pilot that never flew a plane. Well, you can call me whatever you want, but it's not the truth. Christianity has any prophecies? Not even one. Later, after it was given, one of the first popes wrote that the Jews will never return to the Holy Land. The Jews returned to the Holy Land. So here, you gamble. You gave one prophecy in Christianity, and right away it turns to be false. We asked the previous pope, how do you explain this mistake in your writings? Guess what the answer is? Sit tight. The Vatican does not recognize the state of Israel. What a foolish answer. From the head, top authority of Christianity, this is his answer. We're not talking about the state of Israel, Bechla. We're asking Jews return to the land. State, no state, it's not relevant right now. They say the Jews, God left them after the destruction of the Second Temple. They cannot go back to the land. The Jews came back to the land, hundreds of thousands of Jews there. Here you go, close your book, put it you know where. This is just to show you a divine religion as opposed to a fake religion. Let's move on. So Esther and Mordechai are in the Torah almost 1,000 years before they were even born. The whole story, why we call Megillat Esther, Esther? How do you say hidden in Hebrew? Esther Panim. Up to the certain generation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to show magics and miracles to the Jewish nation, as we had in Egypt, the Exodus of Egypt, and even later dates. Up to a certain time, Jews could see mamash clear miracles. In the time of the temple, the smoke always went up straight like a pole. Even in a windy day, the smoke would not go to different direction. They never found bugs where they cut the meat. There was a lot of miracles that everybody saw. From a certain generation and on, no, we cannot see the miracles. Not that we don't have miracles. There's plenty of miracles. Plenty of miracles. I can fill out a whole book just from the amount of miracles that I have in my Kiruv activity every week. A whole book. It's amazing the things that happen. I'll give you an example. One time I come home, I see my wife is holding a credit card and a phone. So what are you buying? Don't smile, the ladies, because by me it's not so common. No, in every house it's coming. But by me, what do we order on the phone? So I see my wife is holding a credit card. I'm curious. I say, what are you ordering? She said, we ran out of checks. We need to order checks. We don't have any more checks to pay the bills. So I told her, okay, how many checks are you ordering? She said, 360 checks. How much? $80-something. That's almost a quarter a check. What's this? That doesn't make sense to me. Let me check 1 second. I turn my computer on, Google, I put printing checks. You can go and check it later. Printing checks. You know how many how many numbers came out? Maybe more than 10,000. Hundreds of pages full of companies that print checks. Every individual in America that has a computer and a printer, you send them a voided check, you send you a box, you charge your credit card, finished. Send you checks. I say to myself, what, I'm going to waste my whole week to save $20, $30? I don't have time for this. I say, Hashem, you know I live with Emunah in you. Help me to find now a good number that I don't waste time. 2 minutes, I order and finish. I say, let's pick this one. I click, they give a 1-877 number, a toll-free number. So phone is always better for me instead of typing. I call up the number. And an American guy picks up the phone. For sales, press 1. I press 1. He picks up the phone, yes. I want to order checks. He said, okay, I see here you have $37 for 600 checks, a quarter of a price than what they charged. Quarter of a price. So I see I want these 600 checks for $37. Can I order it? He said, sure. I said, does that include shipping or not? He said, no, no, shipping is extra. I said, oh, that's the catch. Probably the shipping more than the actual checks. So I said to him, how much is the shipping? He said, depend to where. I said, to Muncie, New York. He says, where in Muncie? Where in Muncie? I said to myself, well, maybe he's a scam here. He wants to know my home address tomorrow. He's going to rob me. What customer service asks you where in Muncie? All Muncie has one shipping rate. So I said to him, High View Corner of Nelson. I don't want to give him an exact. I want to see first how much is this. High View Corner of Nelson. He said, oh, no shipping. Just come tonight at 8:30 to Rabbi Schlesinger Shiur, and I'm going to bring you the checks over there. Now, I got him from 10,000 numbers on the computer on Google. I said, oh, you come to the shul is next door to my house. I said, are you coming to the shiur? See, every night I'm there. I say, you live in Muncie? He say, yes. Now you thought the story is over. It's just beginning now. I say to him, where in Muncie? He say, Bates Drive. I say, I used to live in Bates Drive. What number? The house where I lived, he lived. Wow. 300 million Americans. 10,000 companies. Fuck, I pick up a number. The next day, I went to his house. I saw my previous address, and I picked up the checks. What's the chance that something like this will happen by itself? Zero. There's no chance that something like this can happen, coincidence. It's impossible. Impossible. And Hashem shows us miracles like this throughout our life. Why we are not so impressed? We get used to it. What's the difference between a miracle and nature? Who knows? There's no difference, except one, the frequency. If now you have outside a rainy day, it's raining, people walk with umbrella, nobody gets excited from a rain. We got used to it. You know what a miracle rain is? That rain falls and covers the whole area. Wow, rain. We grew up with that, so we're not impressed. What happened if tomorrow it's going to be blue rain? All blue, all over, it's like ink. Tons of water, it's all blue. The cars are blue, the trees are blue, everything blue. What will happen right away? All Americans will hide under the rugs. For a whole day, nobody will come out. Ooh, maybe Ahmadinejad shot a missile, who knows what happened, a biological war. Nobody would go to work. You think somebody saw blue rain and he goes like this with umbrella in Manhattan? Nobody would dare to go on the street. How do we know? Maybe it caused cancer, who knows? What happened 4 days later? Again, blue rain. What happened? There's 100 fools walking in the street with umbrella. They're already brave. It happened a few days ago, nobody died. I have business to take care of. Third time, 20% of the people. Fourth time, 50%. Until everyone walks with umbrella, blue rain. Tomorrow, the Prime Minister of Israel, after 4 years in coma, decided to wake up. So he wake up, Ariel Sharon. They show him, people on the street, blue rain. What's going on? Millions of people walk like this, business as usual, talking on the phone. Blue rain. What would happen to him? He'll go back to coma again. Blue rain. So what's the difference? He will see it 5 times. He will also get used to it. That's all. The miracles and the nature is exactly the same thing. This is, we got used to it, and this, we're still impressed. We're not used to it. That's why we are excited. A few more times, we get used to it. That's, by the way, the reason why a person is different than all animals. Every animal that is born, right away function. So an elephant, how he give birth? A huge massa falls down. With the leg, the mother kicks the head a few times, like we hit the baby in the hospital. He gets up, mamash, a minute after. He's trying to walk, he falls. Trying to walk, he falls. After 5 minutes, he begins to walk. Deer, same thing, begin to run after 5 minutes. The monkey just was born, you come the next day, he's already jumping on the trees. a person 20 years to get used to the world till he becomes mature. Every day he learns something else, something else. What's the difference? The Torah says, what's the difference between man to all other species? Naturally, physically, none. The animals are greater than us in every field. They run faster, they're stronger, whatever. There's only one advantage that a person has that the animals does not have. It's the divine soul that God put in his body, which is going to be judged after the time of death in front of God for the entire life. So, I have a question. Who say to go to a trial, it's an advantage? Nobody wants to go to court. It's a punishment. The Torah say that it's an advantage. What's the difference between the mankind to animals? That a mankind has a divine soul, that when the time comes for him to leave the world, the soul goes to a trial. Every mitzvah you kept, you get a reward for it. If you did something bad, you get punished for it. That's an advantage. We all know that most of us are sinners. We're not exactly righteous. We're far away from being righteous. Yeah, we do mitzvot, but Lashon Hara, this, we don't give tzedakah, we stingy, Mechalel Shabbat. Oh, the list is long all the way from here to Honolulu. Yeah, let's be honest. Yes, it's difficult, it's a generation, it's not what it used to be with the media, technology, it drives us crazy, fine. The cost of living, no, you have excuses, I'm sure. You can convince me easily. The question is, are we going to be able to convince Hashem that this is enough reason to betray him? That's the question, to be ungrateful to him. For everything he gave us, we take it and we use it against him. Everything. Everything he gave us. He gave us money. What do? We make some of us sins with that. We eat not kosher. You go buy pork and you eat. Who gave you the money? God gave you the money. What do? The thank you that you do, you go and do something against him. Same thing Shabbos. All kinds of things that we not do properly. Eventually, it's going to become a trial. So what's advantage is that? It's not an advantage. Be better off not to have it. The answer is, since you had 100% free choice and you could have done everything correctly and to earn eternity full of pleasures, the fact that you did not do so is 100% your fault. And this is an advantage. Of course it's an advantage. But you didn't use this advantage to your own benefits. You didn't. The divine soul, that means you have a free choice to do whatever you want. The animals have no free choice. The animals live with instinct. What's the difference? A dog sees fire, he runs away. A lion sees a zebra when he's hungry, right away he attacks. Did you ever see a lion that you can tell him, wait 5 minutes before you eat the zebra, we didn't finish taking the pictures? Is that possible? Right, he's hungry, he's attacking right away. The story of Purim, that we call it Megillat Esther, that means Esther means hidden. Everything is hidden. Up to now, everything was open. From now on, I hide myself, my face. What does it mean? Aster, astir, panay me'em. I'm going to hide myself. I'm inside. I'm running the show, but I'm hiding. That's the reason why so many Jews do not want to be religious. Why? Because they say, here, I have friends that are religious. This guy has sick, this guy's poor, this guy's bankrupt. I have friends that are not religious. This guy's a billionaire, this guy's a movie star, this guy's a model, this girl is a model. So what's going on? Where is the justice? Everybody asks this. If God is here, and you say in the Torah that he watched all of us, where is the justice? I'm religious and I have nothing, and he's not religious and he have everything. It's very simple. If the Torah did not give the answer to this question, then they have a very, very strong argument. Very strong argument. Where is the justice? But since the Torah already told you that everything here may confuse you, why? Sometimes I pay people in this life because I don't give them a ticket to life of eternity. So I pay them here for the little that they do correct. And those who I give them eternity, what, they want also here to enjoy for the 20, 30 years? This is a test. This is a place of a test. I'm testing you to see if you're faithful to me or not. If you follow my mitzvot or not. A test has to be when you just gave $1,000 to the shul and you come out and they tow your car. If you give $1,000 and you come out and you just made $1 million, of course you give donation. It's very good. As soon as I give money, I make money. As soon as I steal, I lose double. Of course, it doesn't pay to be wicked. Why should I be wicked? So the answer is, this is what the Torah says. I'm strict with you. Sometimes I torture you like a father to his son. That's what Hashem says. To reward you in your end, for you and your children forever. Not for 40 years, forever. Why? For sticking to my Torah and mitzvot and observe the Sabbath, the tefillin, the tefillah, everything that I wrote in my Torah. You're not doing me a favor. People, Jews think that they're doing God a favor for being religious. Yes.
Why does God care
about you? Why does he care? Now you're going back to the... Now you're going back to a very famous question. The question is why God created the world to begin with. That's really the question. The answer is the source of all good wants to share his greatness to others. That's why he created souls, and he wants to give them from his greatness. Now, a person, since we are created in the image of God, in a spiritual image of God, we have his traits. We have his traits because we are an integral part in a spiritual way. We are a part of him. Therefore, we cannot behave different than him. We have the physical body, which is the evil inclination, the material, that is the opposite of God. It's all desires and fake and everything. But the soul is 100% divine. The soul cannot enjoy a gift unless if it earns it. If you come to my house and I feed you for 1 year, I give you free credit card, car, driver, we do your laundry, we take care of everything for you. You come to help picking up the dishes. No, sit. You're not allowed to help here. Over here, you only receive. Then you begin to suffer after a while. In the beginning, it was nice. Oh, beautiful vacation. But after a month, every time, the more I give you, the more you suffer. Why? Because the nature of a soul is not to receive something it doesn't deserve. To take advantage, it's temporary. After a while, we begin to suffer. So God says, I'm putting you in a system, body and soul, which is a complete two opposite. The soul wants everything spiritual. The body wants everything the opposite of spiritual. Sports, cigarettes, drugs, vacation, swimming. This is all the opposite of the truth. And the Torah wants, the soul wants kindness, tzedakah, mercy, Torah, holiness, modesty. Two opposite things. And they're both in the same combination, the same system, and it's a fight for 70 years. Whoever will win will determine where you go after. You earn big time or you lost big time. Sometimes there's another chance. That's what we call reincarnation. Takes the soul out of this body. His name was Yosef. Making him be born again in the name of Yaakov in a different country to a different family, and now he starts a whole new test. Here he was rich, now he wants him poor. Let's test you how you behave when you're poor. And then there could be another reincarnation. Up to now you did this and this and this correctly, but there are certain things you did not correct. I have to put you in a different environment. Over there you can correct the negative. Until the soul gets corrected and the person receives his heaven for eternity, as the Torah promised, that the reward of the next world to the righteous Jews, if you take all the pleasure of all people of all generations combined, will not be equal to 1 hour reward of a righteous Jew. 1 hour. It cannot, a whole entire 5,000-6,000 years here of billions of people combine all the pleasure they ever had. Money, women, food, vacation, whatever you want. Add it all together. It cannot reach the 1 hour reward of a righteous Jew. And I'm not here to talk about punishments. I don't want anybody to get scared here. But there's other side to the coin. There's also payments to make if we're not doing the proper things. A murderer gets punished. People who does other sins, we all understand that some people are subject to punish. We even have jails and courts and other things in this world. If we see tomorrow, what's his name, Ahmadinejad die, I'm sure we're not going to sit and cry for him, right? Why? Why are we so cruel? Because we understand if we wouldn't die, he would kill all of us. It's either us or him. So we shouldn't sit and cry for our enemies when he's planning to throw a bomb on us, right? So everybody understands he deserves a punishment and he doesn't. Same thing over there. But the actual thing is that Torah means in Hebrew instructions, Hora'ah. And this is what the Torah says. I think we should finish with that. And then if you have questions, I'm giving you the life and the good, the dead and the bad, and you should choose the good, which means you can choose the bad. And why the punishment doesn't come right away? Person just murdered. He lives another 20 years in his mansion. He becomes the prime minister. Nobody knows. Where is the justice? If every murderer would die right away, nobody would ever make a scene. Imagine a person lights a cigarette on Shabbat. His wife, Moshe, where are you? Shh, shh, don't talk, Shabbat. Cannot move. Why? He saw a Jew light a cigarette, boom, went on fire. Another Jew light a cigarette on Shabbat, boom, went on fire. So he says, Moshe, why are you not coming? Shh, Shabbat, talk to me tomorrow night. I don't want to move by mistake. I don't want to die. You know, I made a sin. It's Mechalel Shabbat. That's not the point. To put a gun to a person and tell him, be righteous, if not, we shoot at you, where is the test? Everyone, the Nazis will keep Shabbat. Everyone will keep Shabbat. The idea is I'm giving you Torah, and this is what I say to do. And this is what I say not to do. You have doubts about my Torah? I planted inside the Torah thousands of scientific proof to show that a person was unable to write this book. Fish, scales, fins, chewy scud, all the animals. Watch my DVD. I will give you an indication how many scientific proofs we have in the text that leaves no doubt that this is a divine book. And what's the final thing? Yes, you don't get the reward right away. Yes, you don't get punished right away. You have to trust me that I'm a faithful God who keeps his promise. And when I say that a person will receive the reward in the afterlife, I'm not a politician that promised things before the election and after the election he doesn't remember even what he said. I will finish with a good joke. Speaking about politician, one politician died and he went up to the court of heaven and they told him, listen, you know, technically you should have received a big punishment because he did a lot of bad things. But recently we have a lot of fans, a lot of voters. We don't really know what to do with you. So we're going to show you heaven and hell, and you decide where you want to be. So this politician said, wow, thank you, God, very fair, nice. So he said, which one you want to see first? He said, I want to see hell first. I'm curious. So they go, he goes to hell, he sees all the guitar players, dancers, jet ski, Acapulco, Cancun, big yachts, all the Arab sheikhs over there. Some of the terrorists with 72 girls next to them. Whatever the nonsense. Then he said, oh, this is hell? Psh, wow, what a bargain. So, okay, show me heaven. He goes to heaven. I say, Jews, what do they do? Learn Gemara, everyone. I'm allergic to these guys. Quick, take me back right there. So they bring him back to hell. They open the gate. He comes in. You see, everyone depressed, everything, smoke, fire, people like this. So that's not what I want, where I was. I said, no, didn't get the point. What you saw before, that was before the election. Now it's after the election. So you promised to your voters, I'll do this, I'll lower taxes. We already been in this movie. A day after the election, yalla, let's double the taxes. Let's do this. This is history. It's always been like this. Every leader in the history, first thing he do in all these dictators, not only Arabs, every dictator, first thing he does in the first moment he takes office, he begins to steal money to secure his future. Every one of these dictators, Saddam Hussein, more than $40 billion. The Iranian Shah, $40 billion. Gaddafi, who knows? Nobody even knows how much he had. Mubarak, $70 billion. Arafat, hundreds of millions of dollars. Until today, they're looking for all the money they hid in accounts in every country. The nature of a person to steal, once he begins, he doesn't stop. Tomorrow, he's going to die. An hour before, he's continuing to steal. It's hard to believe how a person thinks he's going to be here forever.
All these dictators, the first thing they do is give jobs to all their friends, all their cousins, all their sons, to take care of everyone.
The only one who never did one of these was Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the leader. When they entered the land, the only family did not receive real estate in Israel was Shevet Levi. Everyone received. His family did not get any land in the Holy Land. Moshe had two sons. Moshe stopped being a leader. His two sons disappeared from history. Nobody even knows what happened with them. Why? They didn't take his place. Every Arab, first thing he wants is his son to take his place. No, Assad in Syria, before he died, he put his son to take his place. Jordan, King Hussein, he puts his son. Gaddafi, if he will be able to do, he'll put his son. Mubarak wanted his son until they wanted to kill him. If it was up to them, he puts his son. He will never let somebody else take. Moshe Rabbeinu, not only his son did not, he wrote in the book that he's stuttering. What do you write about yourself that you hardly can mumble? It's an embarrassment. Clean the story. You ever saw a derogatory comment against Muhammad? Ever in Islam? Or against JC? Never. Moshe got punished, didn't enter the land, stuttering, God got angry at him. You know why? Because the truth of God, you cannot even put one little lie inside. It has to be pure. Cannot have lies in a book. That was reality. They wrote all the good about Moshe, and they wrote the bad. King David, they wrote all the good, and they wrote the bad. Every leader in the Torah and the Tanakh, how much Lashon Hara are in the text about him? He did this wrong, he got angry, he punished him. Why? Because that's the truth. You know, permission to change. It's a divine book. You cannot change one letter. If you take a Jewish Torah, 304,805 letters. One letter is erased by mistake. You skip a little yud. You can, for those of you who know Hebrew, many of the words, if you take the yud out, it doesn't change the meaning. You can read it like this. Today we write many words. We forget yuds. Nobody cares. It's fine. We understand. One little yud you take out of the Torah, it becomes a potato bag. No holiness. You put it in a suitcase, in a lal. They throw it with the luggage. What do you mean? It's a $50,000 store inside. We'll correct tomorrow the yud. Until you correct the yud, it's a potato bag. You put the yud, it's the most important thing in the world. Sefer Torah. Why? Divine? There's not 99.9%. That's why the only book who kept originally as it is the Torah. 80,000 religions and cults, they cannot point which book is the original one that they received because they have so many different versions. How many different New Testaments are in the world? You know, more than 150,000. Each one is different than the other. Over the generations, they were copying. They make mistakes. 150,000 different texts. Quran, hundreds of texts. Torah, one Torah all over the world. The Ashkenaz Jews, the Yemenite Jews, the Syrian Jews, the Persian Jews, they all gathered in Israel 100 years ago, 8 years ago. They opened up the Torah, same Torah. 304,805. When all nations were after the Jews to destroy them and to destroy their Torah. It bothered the Goyim that the Jews have this divine book, and they did everything they can to forbid the Jews from learning Torah. The Romans, the Babylonians, the Philistines, Amalek, who knows? Rome, everyone. The Jews are here, all of them are gone, and the religion has thousands of different books or hundreds of thousands of different books. But the Torah, same one. Without internet, without telephone to verify, a Yemenite Jew came to Yemen from Israel, opened the Torah. Same Bereshit Bara Elokim. Persian Jew came from Tehran, opened, same thing. Polish Jew came from Poland, opened, same thing. Mezuzah, same thing. Tefillin, did you ever see tefillin that is not black? Did you ever see Brit Milah that they cut a different part in the body? Imagine. Rabbi, we have different opinions what Brit Milah is. Why? The truth is always the truth. And a lie, in Hebrew lie, is stand on one leg. How long you can stand on one leg? One day, you fall, you collapse. How do you write sheker in Hebrew? Shin has one leg. One edge in the bottom. Shin.
Kuf, stand on one leg. Resh, stand on one leg. How do you write Emet, the truth? Stand on two legs. Aleph has two legs. Mem has two legs. Taf has two legs. Emet, Aleph is the first letter. Mem is the middle letter in the alphabet. And Taf is the last one. The truth of God is the same from the beginning of the world until the last day in this world. It will never change. Sheker is three letters back to back. It should have been Keresh, Kuf Reshin. That's the right order. But it's Shin Kuf Resh. To show us that the people who live in a lie, not one of them can tell what's the purpose of life. Go ask any secular person in the world, Jews, non-Jews, what's the purpose of life? Nobody knows. To make money, to be successful, to be rich, to get married, to have kids. This is all things the animals can have. You don't need to be a person for it. And animals, they live, they're free, they have as many females as they want. He doesn't have to fix his hair, doesn't have to put a show, what suit I'm going to wear, I'm going on a date. They don't have this. She moves her tail, he moves his tail, doesn't have to buy her a drink, buy her a new car, nothing. Right away, they have kids. They don't have to raise them, $1 million, colleges, problems, surgeries, they don't have all this. Right away, born, play soccer already. That's, if God wanted us to have the things that we think that that's life, it would make us monkeys, or dogs, or birds. They have great life, all over the world in 1 hour, free. But he didn't. He put us here and he gave us Torah. Torah means instruction, Hora'ah. I would like to encourage each one of you to take at least one of each CD, and if you have friends, to give it to them. I have the debate there with the priest. I have an MP3 that have inside English and Hebrew in one CD. So if you understand Hebrew, English, in one CD you have everything. You have about 15, 16 lectures. Then I have a series of Pirkei Avot, Musar and Ethics, about the fake life that we live. Just take it if you can handle the truth. If you want to live in a lie, don't take it. That's the Pirkei Avot. If you think you can handle the truth, take it. Not everything you may agree, but it's not my opinion. It's all there.
Is there a video or a CD?
No, all of them are for CD. The color one are DVDs. The blue ones are all audio, MP3. Whatever say MP3, it's to listen. If you have a new car, most new cars, the last 3-4 years model, they have MP3 in the cars. If not, you can hear in a computer or in an MP3 player. It's all free over there. I want to thank you for coming this on a Motzei Shabbos, especially and tonight they changed the clock. Yeah, tonight at 1 o'clock becomes 2. If you have any questions, you can ask me now or after. I'm here to answer your questions. Thank you very much again.
Thank you very much.